I am unashamed. What about you?
So today, we are welcoming into the lair, for the first time, Mr. Ryan Lee.
Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be in the lair.
A good buddy, a good friend of ours, and also works for One Kingdom, which is we're going to talk about a little bit later. A great ministry that we've all been a part of for our whole lives, pretty much, we've been adults. But also, Ryan is a worship leader, and so I was excited about having him on because Ryan talks about worship a lot on our podcast. So
we've synced up on that for sure.
That's how Ryan and I got to be really good friends because we were part of a team for a couple years. What's funny about it, because I tell Missy when I grow up, I'm going to be able to sing like Ryan Lee.
I don't know. You need to have higher goals than that, Jason. Yeah.
Nah.
Jason's setting the bar low.
Yeah.
I like, though, the fact that what comes across is your, heart for God in worship, and you just tag along. Ryan was at our house. And Phil actually came, which was surprising. We had a surprise birthday party
for the prime rib, though. I mean, there was let's make sure we knew why he was there.
He is on record as saying the food is the draw. Right.
I actually think that's why he came, but that's okay.
Yeah. You are correct. I said, wait a minute, bone in, ribeye.
We're having a birthday party. We're having a cake. Phil's listening. We're gonna worship together. And we're having prime rib. Yeah. Phil's like, I think I'll be there.
Last night we had blackened. No, we didn't. It was mustard fried crappie.
Hmm.
So,
was that come from Stone? Was that one of his offerings? So we train them right, Dad. When the next generation under me now still brings the first fruits to the patriarch, right?
And we had we had some little rolls, and the little rolls we had a little fresh made mayhaw jelly nestled in between there. So it's
mayhaw season.
It was crappie and mayhaw jelly.
Yeah.
So not being from Louisiana, mayhaw jelly has been one of the highlights of being here. And I mean, the mayhaw trees and all that stuff. That's also slow.
Slow. Spelled S-L-O-E.
Yeah.
And you have to say it slow.
Yes.
I told the story about our Nicaraguan daughter, Karina. Every time I introduced it, I would say the slow jelly. So when she went back to college in Minnesota, she was telling all her American friends about the slow jelly. And she kept telling me the story. And I said, were you doing that every time? She went, doing what? Like slow. And she's like, yes, that's how you say it. Huh? I said, no, that's me. She said, well, I was wondering why they were snickering. I was like,
just a lot of O's in it. Yeah, slow.
She just thought, oh, that's just.
The original idea was they call it slows because it's the latest plum that you see anywhere. In other words, all the plums come and go in June, going into July, gone. But these all the way to October.
Yeah,
and they're a late fruit, and I'm
thinking that the spelling is because this came from Scotland and England, and over there I don't know if they make jelly out of it, but they make gin out of it. Slow gin is very famous in Europe, so it's that same. But it made its way over, I guess, with some of the early folks from there.
They brought it with them,
and then it wound up being for here, you know. So,
but to go back to Ryan, and I think it was our first meeting, and it was Trent. And we had our wives there. And I was, because it's a tough situation for them. And everybody who does church work, you're kind of working within an organization and you're wanting to, celebrate on Sunday mornings, Jesus is Lord and he's alive. But you have some of the more mature members who get uncomfortable when you change anything.
Right.
And so Missy and I were bringing some new ideas through creativity. And I remember Ryan saying, I mean, now how far are you wanting to go? But he asked me, like, I was trying to think of a way to describe it. And I said something that I shouldn't have, but he got my point. I said, as in burn the building. And I remember looking at the look on his face because I was making the point that we're the church. We're the right. body of right. Christ. We're going to celebrate. So anything that's a problem within this building, I want to tear that down.
Down.
Right. And so Ryan's like, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, it was a great venture, and we formed a bond, and I really appreciate you leading that night for Missy's birthday. I mean, she cried. I was shocked.
Yeah, she was.
She missed everybody because we're going back from here to Austin, and there's just something about getting out under the stars with people you have a relationship with and celebrating who God is, and it wasn't even a Sunday morning. I think it was a Friday night.
Yeah, it was a Friday night.
It was awesome.
So, Ryan, one of the things I've always wondered about is have you always loved worship, you know, playing music? I mean, when did that, like, because I always wonder with worship, is this your whole life? Is at some point, like everybody else, you had like this awareness, or when did you realize you had that you loved it and you this is something you wanted to do?
My story is, you know, a little bit unique because I grew up in an a cappella church,
right?
As we all did.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we weren't really taught, you know, that instrumental music was bad. It was just that we were always a cappella traditionally. So I never thought of worship as, you know, instrumental. And then, I'm a kid of the 80s and our 90s. Okay. So I'm listening to Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and I'm listening to my alternative rock radio station. And then all of a sudden Jars of Clay comes on. I was like, wait a minute, what is this? This is my style of music, but it's pointed at Jesus.
Right.
And then not long after that, or maybe right before, I can't remember who came out with what, but DC Talk, you remember? Jesus Freak came out.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, we can do this? You know, the thought had never occurred to me. Right. It wasn't that it was wrong. It was just that it never even occurred to me that we could worship in that way. And really, you know, I was in a band in college and did that whole deal, but it was really about 10 years ago that I started listening to worship music. And I went on a men's retreat, and they had a worship team, they had a praise band there, and I just, my heart was just pricked that I could just be free in my worship.
Yeah.
And just to not worry about what this guy on my right is doing, what this guy on my left is doing, but just be free with an intimate one-on-one moment with Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's when it turned for me. And then, like, I couldn't tell you what a whole lot of relevant music is going on today. I just don't listen to it.
Right.
Because all I listen to is worship. Yeah. And that has really transformed my life, because now, you know, I'm in the truck and I got two boys and they're in the back of the truck singing worship songs and requesting specific songs. And so that really, that moment, I think, you know, understanding that there's freedom in our worship, that there's not a specific way that you're supposed to do it.
Right.
Really, really changed.
And that it's not just reserved. We talk a lot about this on this podcast for Sundays.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like, what you're describing is really a whole lifestyle of worship, that it's all the time.
Yeah.
And that it goes to the next generation.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I have a habit now. Every time I pull up in a parking lot where mischievous events are happening, like a golf tournament, or you just, you know, it has a certain smell to it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like pre-vomit. You know, well, it's like Bourbon Street. You know, when you, as soon as you,
that's post vomit. Yeah,
that's post.
Yeah, Bourbon Street's post for sure.
But this is pre. You smell all the right ingredients, and you're fast forwarding your mind 4 or 5 hours, and you're like, yeah. So I always turn that worship music wide open while I'm getting my stuff out, because people are looking around. But I'm like, and I mean, I always have my Bible in my truck, but I'm just setting the tone. And I need that for what I'm fixing to encounter. And so, I mean, Al, you're right. And what you were saying about free to worship, you know, the two places in the New Testament that talk about, I guess, how we worship, because the whole point is who.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The how, it gives lists. So when I view that just as a average intelligence person, I'm like, sing spiritual songs and hymns, and what's the other one? What does it say? Hymns,
is it Colossians?
Spiritual songs. I'm having a brain cramp. But I'm like, that
to one another, right?
Yeah, but he lists categories, which there's a lot of things that are involved with that. You know, when you see Psalms, the definition is with a stringed instrument.
Mm-hmm.
my Bible's falling apart
I'm noticing that, yeah.
Yeah, and I have a new one.
It's embarrassing. But
I've lost it. I don't have Ephesians 5.
Instead of highlights, Jace has coffee stains.
Ephesians 5 is no longer in my Bible.
So I was thinking, are you talking about this one? Colossians 3 says, "Let the word of Christ," 16, "let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, and as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your hearts to God."
Okay, I found Ephesians 5. "Speak to one another," it says the same thing, "with psalms," which is singing with a stringed instrument.
Right, right.
"Hymns."
Yep.
We got that down. Mm-hmm. "And spiritual songs." Mm-hmm. Well, that's a lot of different categories and a lot of different ways to express yourself, is the way I always read it.
You know, what strikes me is when John the Revelator is telling the story of what he was seeing when the Roman Empire decided they were going to crush the people of God. In the middle of all of it, he said, "I saw heaven open, and another great and marvelous sign, seven angels with the seven plagues last, because with them God's wrath is completed." So he devastates the Roman Empire on our behalf. We won at the end of the day. "I saw what looked like a sea of glass mixed with fire standing beside the sea." He's got a picture in heaven. "Those who had been victorious over the beast," the saints, "and his image and over the number of his name. They held harps given them by God." So God furnished a harp for all these people. "And they sang the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb." Then it has the song right there. But you say, if God outfitted them with some harps, I'm saying,
well, I would love to see you play a harp.
Fill on a harp, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
saying, take yeah. note of that, whatever that means.
By the way, that's the proper harp technique
yeah.
that he's showing
impressed.
Right here.
I was impressed. I was impressed.
Ryan, the next time you form a praise team, we need Phil over on the side with
Amen.
A harp.
Oh, yeah.
Or saying, a cowbell, more cowbells.
I'm just saying, they held harps given them by God. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, what is the hullabaloo about all this? I mean, you know. I mean, loosen up a little bit here. If it's a picture and they're in heaven and God has furnished the harps,
right.
I'm like,
that's where we get.
It doesn't bother him. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's where the illustration came through the middle centuries of the little baby looking angel
with the harp.
Yeah, you know, that comes from that
tiny harp.
But the point was they were all singing, "Worthy is the Lamb."
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, God was
being praised.
We get so sidetracked on how we're going to do something. And that's what I was making the point about.
Actually,
organized.
Condemn people and get angry with others.
Yeah. I'm like, just make sure that you're worshiping the Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll give you some slack on how exactly you want to do that.
Right. Well, if you notice that in every the verses that you just quoted in Ephesians, Colossians, every verse about worship talks about a grateful heart.
Yeah.
You know, it's a response. If you're not grateful, then you're really not doing it right. You're talking about wanting to do it right?
Yeah.
Start with a grateful heart.
Yeah, that's right.
Then you have Genesis chapter 4.
Uh-oh.
When God made mankind, he had somebody named Zillith, but and here comes old Jubal.
Jubal.
Yeah.
I was wondering how long. Look, we had
Jubal was the father of who play the harp and the flute.
What was over under on Jubal?
10 minutes. I lost.
So catch this. He made individuals who were Jubilee. You say he made people that were very good.
Yeah.
Playing instruments.
Ryan's ancestors.
And then we got the folks who were saying, but he never wanted to hear it while we were on planet Earth. I'm like, well, he made them. and some people just have a knack for musical instruments. You say, I wonder where they got that.
So, this is a good point. Let's
Descendants of old Jubal.
Let's take a quick break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated.
so I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
So Ryan, every time somebody's on here that's musical, we always go to Genesis 4.
Jubal.
Son of Jubal.
I just always throw a couple in saying, I don't know, boys, what about this one? I mean, you know, calm down.
I guess that's
down.
Where they that's get the point, word man. Jubilee.
Yeah, probably
that's
so.
The root.
I added that. I would think.
Jubilation's another
Jubilee. Feels right, yeah. But you know, I mean, one of my favorite chapters in the Bible is Luke 15, and people go there talk about the prodigal son and the lost sheep. If you lose 99... And, you know, why is Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners? That was the accusation. But really, it's about joy on earth and in heaven.
Yep.
About God establishing the relationship back with people, the bridge, which is Jesus. I mean, he's like, not only is there rejoicing when something lost is found, there's rejoicing in heaven. And he says it over and over and over. So you get a picture of, we're not just, you know, celebrating here. And what would seem crazy is if they're celebrating in heaven over someone coming to God and there's no celebration here. Right. What? That doesn't make sense.
He was drinking wine with some people in a place. And when the Pharisees saw him, they said, look at that. He's a drunkard.
Yeah.
They went from he's having a glass of wine to a drunkard.
Yeah.
And Jesus chastised them. He said, you know, you say John the Baptist has a demon, which is a lie. And he said, and you call me a drunk and a wine bibber, whatever. He said,
a glutton
and a wine bibber. But he said, wisdom will be proved right by its actions. Mm-hmm. Then he just went right on. So that's what I'm saying. They look at something, they just overreact. I mean, good night, he's got a glass of wine.
Well, and that's been one of the sad things to me, traveling around the American church. I figured out, no matter what group you're with, I talk to pastors and leaders, and it's always, they call them worship wars, and it's always over the style and the how in these places. Mm-hmm. And so just as we've said today, that's so sad to me, because if you're arguing over the how, you totally miss the who.
Right.
That's I mean, there's no way you can be coming in there with that. Right before we went on air, you were talking about vulnerability in leading worship.
Yeah.
And which I think is the same even in participating, right?
Think about it, Al. Absolutely. 98% of our worship is from Monday through Saturday.
Yeah.
A small percentage.
Because that's most of the time of our life.
A small percentage is with the brothers themselves. Right. But the structure became more important than the worship. So you're looking on how you're going to go about worship, and you're like, y'all need to loosen up a little bit.
So Dad gave us one from Revelation. I wanted you guys to chime in, too, on some place in Scripture that you love about worship. For me, it's always been, because I marvel at it, was in Job 1. After Job got the bad news of he lost his children, he lost his wealth, he lost everything in one fell swoop. And look, it was just message. So it was like a triple whammy. And so at this, the last one in verse 20, Job got up, tore his robe, which was an ancient way of saying I'm in misery, shaved his head, which meant I'm worth nothing. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, and then here was his worship, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. And I just thought, you know, we think about times when you worship.
Yeah.
In this case, it was the worst crushing thing that we couldn't even imagine. And Job's response was to worship God, which, I mean, that's the standard for me. I'm just like, no matter what you're
going to decide. When you offer your body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, don't conform in it, which is your spiritual act of worship. Mm-hmm. And don't get with the world, but stay away from them. You don't do worldly things, you know.
Right.
You know, don't let them get you in there, take you in there. But it's a full-time thing, 24/7.
That's where you got to start. For me, you know, Phil just quoted it, Romans 12:1.
Yeah.
You know, your true and proper worship is your living sacrifice.
That's it.
You know, where I think we get caught up with the word worship is only songs.
Yeah.
Well, your worship is the way you live.
That's it.
It's in your work. It's in your relationships. It's everything you do. It's not just this, you know, 1 hour on a Sunday morning. It's how you live. So then when we get together and sing songs, it's just a celebration.
Right. Yep.
You know, and you can use, you know, a lot of these songs nowadays are, they're talking about worship as a weapon. You think about Second Chronicles with Jehoshaphat, you know, they go and sing over the victory over Ammon and Moab. And then Joshua, of course, you know, with the walls of Jericho, they're playing trumpets. You know, even David.
Miriam after the Red Sea.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah.
Well, I love David. You know, he's in a cave hiding for his life, you know.
Yeah.
They're after him. And what does he do? He writes a song.
Yeah.
You know, and sings praises to God and says, you know, no matter what happens here, I'm going to praise you.
And the evil one uses music too. There's some brands of music that especially young people need to stay away from.
That's a great point.
It's musical filth. So you say it always cuts the same way. We're pointing people to Jesus. Well, there's other musicians out there that are pointing people to the evil one. So. Hey.
Well, and it's a reflection of their heart. It's
you like recognize them by their fruit. Well,
some of these like rap songs and all, people are angry, and they feel guilty, and they've bad things have happened, and you're just seeing a reflection of their heart, which is, you know, when you look at the other side of it.
Plus, so many of the lyrics are degrading to people, to women, it's a terrible.
Yeah,
a cultural thing as well, and I mean, when you hear it, sometimes we were at the beach a few weeks ago, and this kid walks by, and he's got, you know, it's a little bit skinny little dude, white dude, but he's listening to these rap lyrics. But I mean, it was just filthy, and he's walking, snaking his way down through all these people at the beach, and everybody's just looking around. You know, most people got their little rock music or little you know classics on, and it was loud, and everybody's just looking at this kid like, "What are you doing?" I mean.
He's doing the same thing I'm doing. He's making a statement.
He is. Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, I used to listen to some of that when I was younger, you know, just thinking we would justify it and say, oh, we just like the beat.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not listening to the lyrics, you know.
Yeah.
But what's funny is now with all these music services, you can listen to whatever you want, and CDs are a thing of the past now. And so every now and then I'll go back and I'll listen to something. You know, this is what I was listening to when I was 16. And I can't even get through the first 30 seconds of the song. And I think that's, you know, part of the sanctification process. You know, like that would really cut you if you were really listening to it. If you were really living holy, some of these lyrics would really, really make you cringe.
Do you remember those? Do you remember, are you too young for those, the old shows? The way they used to roll out music, they would have these shows usually on Friday night or Saturday, American Bandstand. Right, there were three or four of them, Soul Train.
Right.
So it was their way to get new music out because you didn't have all the avenues today. It was funny, they'd have all these kids out there and they're dancing, they're playing the new music. And then they would interview a couple of them. You know, it's like, what do you like about this song? Well, it's got a good beat.
Yeah.
It was always that to start with. It was like, well, it has a good beat. And that was about it. You know,
no substance
at all. But I just remember back thinking culturally, that's how it started. And it was not nearly as bad as it is today, but it's just kind of progressively gotten worse.
You know, I always liked that old country style music that was in that old brother Where Art Thou, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the songs that came out of that, I said.
You know, our family sang one of those songs.
Oh, was that right?
Marv's wife was in a group that sang one of those songs that's on that album.
Oh, that's right. I remember it.
Yeah.
One of our cousins.
She sang at Jan's funeral.
That's exactly right. She did.
She sang I'll Fly Away.
She did. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Some of that music really was good.
And when a lot of it was spiritual. I mean, it was hymns.
Yeah,
it was. A big chunk of it was.
You know, you brought up Jan's funeral. I mean, you know, your emotions are raw. But we sang that. I remember just thinking, this is what heaven is like. I mean, that was, it just seemed supernatural.
You know, it's a good point. And that's when I'm at a funeral like that and there's worship that happens, and I've been to many, and it's usually because of the person we're celebrating, who they were in Christ. But it's really a lot like this Job passage, you know, because you think about it, it doesn't make a lot of sense that we're like celebrating and worship and touched and moved, but people live lives that affect us that way.
Plus, I don't think our mindset needs to be, let's get rid of, we were in a kind of a rut saying this is the only way. But I think everyone needs to remember, you know, a cappella, when done with some great voices, is a powerful thing.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm saying, I'm one who's saying you shouldn't get rid of a cappella music. You should have that. I think I said, because there are times when it fits the situation.
Well, when you brought that up, my favorite passage.
Hang on, Jason. Let's take a break. So, Ryan, you've had many jobs, as we've seen. Did you ever sell insurance? Was insurance?
I sold insurance at Merrill. We did some life insurance annuities there. My dad is actually an insurance agent.
Oh, okay, good. Well, then you'll appreciate this. Yeah. One of our sponsors is a company called Gabi, G-A-B-I. And what they've done is they've taken full advantage of the internet to be able to quickly search for companies who offer the best rate. So if you're looking for a home insurance or car insurance, instead of you having to go out and find out all the rates and who's the cheapest and all this, Gabi basically does it for you and then says, here's the one that has the best deal. And it was pretty amazing because Lisa and I just used these guys and we had a company, you know, that we had a quote, but I don't know. I'm the kind of guy, that's what it costs. So pay it. So she looks it up on Gabi. Well, they were like fourth. Yeah. I mean, there was, you know, and these are all well-known companies, you know, that people recognize. So if you want to save a little money, check out these guys. They average $961 a year in savings, and they never sell your info, so you don't have any of these robocalls and all that stuff that come from it. So put your policy to the test. I did it. It worked. I saved some money. Go to Gabi, GABI.com/unashamed. That's GABI.com/unashamed and save a little money.
My favorite passage is Mark 14:26. It's an obscure, subtle passage. But right before he goes to start the process to the cross, you know, Peter denying him all the trials, and he just said, I'm fixed to pour out my blood for you.
Yeah.
It says in 14:26, when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. And I thought about them singing that song.
These were probably all males, would you think? Some of the women with them?
Probably. You know, I think there was a little cadre of them. Yeah. That, one of the things on The Chosen is they kind of have a little
group. That's a good point, right. Yeah. Good point.
But I tell you this, and here's the point I want to make. Probably some of them, because they're humans and they, you know, I've had this same problem. They probably sang the song, but they don't know what's fixed to happen.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, the next time they sing this song, mm-hmm. wherever they were, after all this happens, Jesus dies and buried and resurrected, I will guarantee you, there was an emotional response. Mm-hmm. There was a celebration response. Yep. There were tears flowing. And that's kind of, I think, how we do. We get into a routine, and we're not looking at the big picture and not, you know, coupling our problems with his solution, and then all of a sudden something happens, like at Jan's funeral, and you start reflecting and thinking of who God is and what he's done in your life, and all of a sudden it just pours out.
There's a lot of singing going on for the 5,000, by my count, the 5,000 years when they were saying the prophets, Jesus is coming. There was a lot of singing going on throughout the Bible. There was a lot of singing going on, period. So yeah, there's a place for it.
Yeah, it starts with the Israelites. You know, they in Exodus, they're free. The first worship song recorded in the Bible is there in Exodus as they're marching out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And they sing a song of praise of freedom. It's a freedom song.
Yep.
And I think that goes back to that grateful heart. If you're singing about the things that God has done in your life, then shouldn't there be an emotion? Shouldn't there be a passion about what you're doing there?
Some events just call for song. It's in our DNA, I guess.
Like Jay says, some songs will evoke a memory, a person. There's a song we sing sometimes called Complete. And every time we sing it, I think of Gary Myers, a guy who's gone on to be with the Lord, who died of cancer. But it was just a very passionate worship leader for many years at our church. And that song, just I think of him every single time. It always brings a tear to my eye because I just, the passion of him.
Right.
And of course, it's all about Christ, but that's who he loved, you know? So it is amazing. You're right, just that songs can evoke that, you know?
And the other side of that now is, you know, one of my favorite verses is Psalm 98, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. So I love all the old songs, and I think there's something about the old songs that evoke that emotion. You know, I can tell you, if I hear a Dave Matthews Band song, I can picture myself driving an old car with my little disc man with the anti-shock, you know, and plugged into the cigarette lighter. You know, you can just you bring you back to a time.
You're old enough to remember cigarette.
I remember the cigarette lighter. Yeah,
I listened to the Eagles on the way over here, and
there you go.
And he was Hotel California, and I said, "Who in the world would not like that at any time?"
Right, right.
That's just a borderline satanic.
Yep,
song.
It is.
But it is. But it's got a good beat.
It's got a good beat. It is. And by the way, Dad, it's in the top five of all time rock songs.
Really?
Yeah, I just heard the whole list.
I heard it a while ago.
It was funny. Yesterday I was texting Mac Powell, who is, I guess he's been doing contemporary music for the longest and was the first kind of band I listened to because Missy was trying to get me involved for years. I mean, and I had the same moment you had probably 3 years ago. I mean, once I got into it, I'm in.
Yeah.
But she's like, I think you'll like this guy because he has a style, kind of a rock style that you listen to, because I love Lynyrd Skynyrd and Creedence Clearwater Revival, and that's what Phil used to play in the duck call shop to keep us, you know, working when we were kids. But so later on, I get to meet Mac Powell, and he's like, he was coming to Monroe. That's what I was talking to him about yesterday, because he's coming again in like a week. And so he's like, why don't you get up on stage with us and play with us? I was like, I can't. I was like, you need to get my wife up there.
We could get a harp.
Yeah, I can't. Let's get a harp. I said, now I could do a duck call, something funny. And he's like, no. He's like, they'll never know. And so he said, we'll just get you a guitar and we just won't plug it in.
Plug it in.
So I was like, okay, let's do it. So we get up there and he says, what do you want to play? So I just throw out some Lynyrd Skynyrd. And you know, people thought this was playing. They crank up. They Call Me the Breeze,
which is one of their all-time best.
Yeah. And of course, I'm playing the guitar. Yeah. And look, I've had through the years, I would say at least 100 people come up and say, "Boy, you could really." I just was shocked you could play a guitar.
Didn't know you had it in you.
I was like, you know, so just the gifts, you know, that God has bestowed on me are hard to explain. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a funny moment. So there's pictures floating around out there about me in concert playing the Breeze.
I never heard that story, Jay. That's a pretty good story.
Yeah, it happened.
Willie got on stage just recently, I guess the year before the pandemic, I guess it was 19, with the Foreigner, because they're a big part of his story. Jukebox Hero, you know, it's how he used to make money on the school bus. And because he was the human jukebox, and he put a quarter under his arm and he'd drop it in his hand, and then he did all of his sing the song. So he's always, and they got it from me because I liked Foreigner. So, you know, your brother's here, what your older brother plays. So he got an opportunity. I guess they knew that, but they pulled him up on stage.
I will say that some people take it in a negative light, because I was baptizing this girl down in the river, and there was a pretty good little crowd that gathered up on the riverbank, and a couple of bass fishermen were coming up the bayou. They were bass fishing. So they just kind of ran into they just come around the curve, and all of a sudden it broke out in song when I baptized this girl. Yeah. And I turned around and looked, And I saw them. They was like standing up in their boat with their rods and reels, you know. I said, "Hey, y'all want in on this action?" I've never seen two people leave so fast. They left the premises.
I guess they were.
It was kind of like a singing out of "Old Brother, Where Art Thou?" You know, down in the baptism, you know, and the guy, they thought. I said, "Y'all want in on some of this action?" Boy, did they get out of there. Woo. A lot scarier is the ex-drunk with a Bible in his hand than if he had a real weapon.
Oh, yeah, that's scary.
It's scarier if an ex-drunk's got a Bible hollering about Jesus.
That's scary a lot. So let's take another break. So, Ryan, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about, because you're the director of our One Kingdom Ministry, which, how long have you been doing that? Because you used to be a stock guy.
Yeah.
I won't even get into that. Because
we don't need to talk.
You're a stock guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked for Merrill.
I worked for Merrill Lynch for 8 years.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. No, I'm kidding.
No. We don't want to start that.
Yeah. We'll go down a rabbit hole there. But in 2016, I've felt the call. And a lot of you guys know my story. But I fought it for many years. Yep. You know, I was asked to be the youth minister for... symbolically, I turned it down 3 times, Jace. And, but there was a seed just planted in me that, you know, everything I was doing, it was already ministry.
And you and your wife, Miranda, worked with our college kids with right. some other Which, volunteers. Yep.
In a weird set of circumstances, we talked about it in the party. Do you want to tell, or share with, I'm part of the process led you to your wife?
Oh, yeah. So Jace baptized my wife when she was in youth group.
Yeah.
So she was, it was at camp.
I have trouble going back over a 2-week period.
Right. Yeah. Let me
don't ask him anything past
yesterday. As soon as I said it, I knew it. I was like, no, he doesn't know. No. He doesn't know.
But I met her because I used to teach the junior high and because I had a burr in my saddle because nobody wanted to do that. And then I went and taught it for the first time and realized why nobody wanted to do this. Because right. it's such an awkward age.
Yeah.
And then I took it as a challenge. I thought I'm gonna try to reach these people.
Yep.
And she was in one of the first classes that I did. But I told you, and I wasn't kidding when we were talking about the other night. There was always a couple in each class that I would think to myself, now this person is going places, even at a junior high age.
Yeah.
And she was one of those people. I mean, I loved everything about her. I said, she's got a heart of gold.
Yeah. So I can't blame you.
That's why when I heard, I don't know if you know this, but when I heard y'all were getting married, I was like, whoa. Because I had never met you.
Right.
And I said, babe, get her parents on the phone because we need to have a talk. And I had a conversation with them.
With my in-laws?
Yeah, about you.
I don't know the story.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And they assured me.
You were being vetted without your knowledge,
well,
right?
It's like I hadn't even seen her in years, but I was like, no, wait a minute. Getting married? I don't even know this guy.
Which is kind of ironic because we've said on this podcast before, every Robertson male was rejected by their in-laws on the initial run to get married. So it's kind of ironic that Jace didn't even know you and he's having these things.
So I had the same deal on the opposite side of that, Jace, because I come to visit White's Ferry Road as Miranda's boyfriend or fiance. I don't remember the timeline.
Yeah.
And, we take responses at the end. We have our family time. And here comes Phil walking down. And I was like, this poor guy, he's coming down to lay his heart out. And then he's just standing there.
He's probably drunk.
Yeah. And I said, look at Miranda. I was like, what's this guy's story? And she's like, that's Phil. He's one of our elders. I was like, okay. And then she points at Jace and she's like, yeah, that's his son. He baptized me. I was like, huh?
What's going on?
Who's this guy? Cult am I?
Right. I'm looking around like head on a swivel. So
yeah, where the rednecks and the stock market meet.
That's a great way. There's the title of this podcast right here.
That's exactly right.
Billy, I was checking you out and you were like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to go through some skeletons in the closet.
No doubt. Yeah.
Like the girl asked me a couple of weeks ago, where's the preacher around here? They've never been there before. They said, we think we got the wrong church. Where's the preacher? They asked me, and I said, oh, he's around here somewhere. They said, who are you? I said, Jim Smith. They
Billy,
said, Jim.
This story, every time I hear it, I'm like.
It struck me.
Why not just
both
say
of them,
Phil? I'm Phil. I'm the.
Why well, Jim Smith?
It just struck me. I was having a little fun with them, but you say, what happened? They both were converted to Christ.
Even though their first thing that happened, they had a lie.
You got lied to. Yeah, on the first interaction.
I didn't lie to them. They said, where's the preacher? I said, he's around here somewhere.
Jim Smith is a lie.
Old Jim Smitty.
Yeah. No.
I just threw that in because, then they were surprised. Old Jim gets up. Well, good night. There's the preacher. They told me about it later. They said, why did you tell us that? I said, well, I just funning around with you, girl. They said, well, thank you for that message because we get eternal life here today. Oh, so man, they both obeyed God. The gospel. No,
this is one of Phil's stories that's like Si. Si has about 12 stories.
That's right.
But no matter when you hear them, they're always
still
good.
Gold.
Always good.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that's this one. It's always good.
That's right.
So you are the director of One Kingdom. Keep us back, hurt us back.
Well, tell us about the name, because a lot of people think, what does that mean?
One Kingdom. Yeah.
Because the ministry has been around almost as long as our church has been.
That's
around.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not, you guys have kind of rebranded. So
it's been around for 2,000 years, huh?
Well, that's true.
That's true.
That is planned before that.
That's right.
You got it.
So the ministry was actually started over 60 years ago, and it was called World Radio, and it's still World Radio, still one of our main projects. But the goal was to get the gospel out to every nation, every language.
Yep.
And what they found was they started off You know, with the, I think we bought a radio station in South America somewhere. Of course, that was taken over by the government. So I said, okay, well, let's try to do it a different way. But then we started buying airtime for leaders that God had raised up in their respective countries. And that has evolved into so many things now. Now it's one kingdom, and our goal is to empower and equip local leaders to share the gospel in every nation and every language.
How many nations are you in?
Almost 70 now.
Whoa.
Wow.
Almost 70. We're about 68.
Which is basically a third of the world.
I thought you were going to say seven.
Yeah.
70.
70. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We give to y'all, Miss Kay and I, you know, we've been the supporters of it for a long time. It's really morphed out. I remember when it first started.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. We have a particular love, Mom and Dad and Lisa and I, for a project in Liberia.
Yes.
That, to me, kind of encapsulates everything you got.
It tells the story really well. Yeah. So in Monrovia, Liberia, of course, we have our friend there, Isaac Day, which I want to just stop here for a second and ask all of the listeners of Unashamed to pray for Isaac.
Yeah.
Isaac's a partner of ours, but he's been dealing with some health issues. He's my second favorite Isaac, I always say, because my firstborn son's named Isaac. Yeah. Yeah. But he's a man after God's heart, and
I think we all know him.
Yeah, and I've been in Gambia right? And also Liberia probably 4 or 5 times. I've traveled over there and to do things with him. He's a tremendous, you know, son of God.
He's the one that finds other reliable men who can teach others.
I remember the first time I heard him preach, and Missy wasn't with me when I got home. I said, you know what? I didn't understand everything he said, but I loved it.
Yes.
Because of the accent.
He has a strong accent. He does have a strong accent. You know? Yeah.
And then when I talked to him, he could understand nothing I said because he was like,
because you too have a strong accent.
He said, what kind of English is this? I took that as a bad sign.
He said, bad.
What kind of English is this?
Yeah. Al tells a story about being with him when they looked up and some guy with smoke coming out of it. Al said he never figured out where the smoke was coming from, but some guy with all dressed up hair like this, and I mean, and he was basically tell that story.
He was, was it Mac Owen?
He was a shaman.
Yeah.
And what Isaac said about him.
Yeah, let's take another break. Yeah, it was in the Gambia, and apparently he was some kind of shaman.
Yeah.
He had what looked like a ghillie suit on.
What's a shaman?
Like some kind of tribal medicine man.
Like a voodoo.
Yeah. So he comes down the street. I hear all this banging around, and it was like I walk outside, you know, and I'm just looking around. And so I could hear him coming down the street.
And the church is there.
Well, we were at Isaac's house.
Yeah.
But he's walking down the street, and so I see people going out, and they're giving him money. And so I'm watching this, you know, and I'm intrigued, you know, because you're in another country. But it was kind of scary because he had this smoke coming out from somewhere, and he's got this suit on, and you can't see his, you know, just his eyes.
Right.
And it's kind of spooky looking. So Fatu runs out, Isaac's wife, and she says, oh, get back in the house, Pastor Allen. You don't want to be out here with this guy. And I said, well, what are they doing? She said, well, they give him money so he won't put curses on you. She said, but you don't want to look him in the eyes. It's like, okay.
It's like, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't put curses on people.
Yeah, that's right.
You mean, this who do I make that check out?
Basically, this was right. Demonic.
It was demonic, yeah. But it was, I guess, that they were, you know, the people believed in it, the people that were out there giving money to
Isaac basically said, what did he say? Don't worry about it.
He said, don't even mess with
it. You don't want to get cursed by those guys either because they have to have that come true.
Right.
So if they're like, hey, I'm putting a curse for you to die, well, they're going to figure out a way to kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they got to be right, you know, for the legend to go on. So
it's all making sense now.
Yes. Yep. And I've seen that in other places. We've been to Haiti before. Haiti's big on the, and you can feel it's a palpable evil when you go around these voodoo houses and places. It's the real deal. And, you know, we've talked about it before on the podcast, but I've seen a lot with Isaac especially that, you know, you'll see a lot more crazy things if people are willing to believe it.
Yeah.
My theory has always been you don't see as much in the U.S. in terms of demonic stuff because they don't tend to believe it. You know, they just say, you know, everybody's got a script for it. It's a mental illness, it's this, it's that. But you go to the third world, you see some and hear about some crazy things.
It's just like a different way to have a mafia. Because they're basically offering you protection.
Right. And in Liberia, they call it the secret society. That's very much like that. So
I mean, there's a name for it.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
So tell them a little bit about the school, the Guri, right. and all that in our last few minutes.
One of our philosophies at One Kingdom is that we believe that God has raised up leaders all over the world. You know, the old way, I say the old way, it's still effective, but we don't necessarily send American missionaries to go live right. anywhere or spend long-term missions because we believe God is working already in those locations. And and so we try to come in support of the visions that God has laid on these men's heart.
Right.
So Isaac is one of those. And he had a vision years back to start a preaching school that also taught men and women agriculture. Because at the end of the day, you can teach a man to preach, but in those countries, it's hard for them to support themselves. So then they're calling back to the United States, hey, I need support. Well, Isaac had the idea to say, let's teach them the Bible. Let's teach them how to spread the gospel. But let's also teach them how to farm so they can support their ministry themselves and they're not dependent on U.S. support.
Seems simplistic, but it works.
Yes.
And it's also
a great idea.
And it's also helping rebuild a war-torn country.
That's right.
Because you're now getting some, you know, entrepreneurship,
right.
you know, and you're instilling it through spiritual people, which is amazing.
That's right. So they have the Restoration Bible and Agriculture Institute, which they've graduated now. They're working on their third class. So you and I have been to both of the graduations of the first two, which is, you know, hopefully we'll get down there for the third.
Yeah.
We hadn't talked about that yet, but I'm gonna put you in the spot here. But so they're teaching men to preach. They're teaching men to farm. They've also started this Guri facility. So to tell you a little bit about Guri, Guri is it's like a starch. It's it comes from like a potato-like substance,
like a root,
cassava. So if you know cassava, it looks like a potato, but they mash it up into what they call Guri, and it's used in every meal. It's just behind, you know, rice. It's the second most popular food in Liberia. Well, they don't produce any Guri in Liberia. They import it all from Nigeria. So Isaac said, look, we got to start that now. We got to start our own producing our own Guri. We'll have our preachers that are learning. They'll farm cassava, feed the Guri facility. That money will go back into support. So it's a self-sustaining environment.
Yep.
And you know, one of our goals, it sounds counterintuitive, is for us to not be supporting this mission anymore.
Right.
Because they, you know, God has given you everything that you need around you to not only survive, but to flourish.
That's right.
You know, and I think prosperity is a word that we confuse sometimes with riches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prosperity is just living full in the gospel and knowing that God's given you everything you need to survive.
Yeah.
And that's what Isaac's trying to teach these young men and women. They've also started a skills training center for women.
Yeah. Which I love.
You know, a lot of these women, you know, just like here, the man, the husband is not involved. Or they've taken off, or they're alcoholics, or what, you know, and some of them have turned to prostitution or just really tough lives.
Yeah.
And Isaac has given them an avenue to learn tailoring and sewing and to start their own business so they can support their families. It's really a work that we're really highly invested into.
And his Isaac's wife and daughter have been a big part of that, and also his wife has started. We call it the Daymart. I think
it says Daymart on there.
I know. I think I jokingly said it and coined it. Yeah. And then now it's on their sign, Daymart, like Walmart. But she runs the whole business. And so when I look at Fatu, who's a wonderful person, I think about Proverbs 31. You know, that's
she's
her.
She's a P31 woman.
She's that woman. Yeah. And so these are wonderful people. And, you know, and we don't have much time left, but I was thinking about, Jess, you mentioned Karina earlier. That came about because of One Kingdom, because one of our ambassadors who's in Nicaragua.
Yep.
Needed some place for her to be for a period of time, and that connection was made for you guys, and now we have a daughter. I mean, I have a new niece out of that situation, but that came about because of
Esteban. Yeah.
Because of Esteban.
Yeah,
that's right. And he had kind of offered to mentor her because she was basically an orphan. You know, she had one sister, and just led her in a way of, you know, you learn, educate yourself, internet, keep yourself out of trouble. You know, but overall, you put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ because he has a plan for you. And boy, I'm telling you, one of the most impressive people that I've ever been around.
I love Karina.
Oh, she's amazing.
So Matthew 28, 18 through 20 was always the guiding force for radio and now for the entire ministry, because you guys do relief work too.
Yep.
We had a couple of guys on that are doing these video series about work being done in Lake Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And then right along that time, on one of the One Kingdom Sunday a couple of weeks back, and you guys did a tremendous video about a family that we helped, and you guys rebuilt it. I mean, I just wept through the whole thing.
That's where we got the idea to have you on.
Yeah.
I was watching that too. I thought, Oh boy,
I was a mess now because you got, I came up and spoke, and I'd seen that video probably a dozen times, and I walk up to the stage and I was just overwhelmed because she's sitting there in the audience.
Yeah,
you know, and for those that don't know the story, we partnered with an online boutique that they do a give back weekends. Carly Jean Los Angeles. I'll give them a plug here. They do great. You know, it's a women's boutique. They're based out of Los Angeles. They do a give back weekend where they raise money for a charitable cause, and they wanted to partner with us with One Kingdom for relief work. And we were able to rebuild this woman's house. I mean, and not just the roof, not just the walls, the floors. That's what she thought was being done. But they raised enough money that we were able to completely remodel their home, new furniture, appliances.
It was a beautiful home.
Yeah.
And she was just so moved. And then she was there that day and we had lunch afterwards. Yeah. And it was a wonderful day, which, by the way, the audience, if you go to WFRChurch.org, look in our archives. It was about 3 weeks ago, but you'll see One Kingdom. So tell folks in our last bit here how they can, if they want to help out One Kingdom.
Yeah,
how they do.
Go to onekingdom.org, and there's a ways to help bar on the upper right hand corner. And you know, the best way that you can help is a monthly donation, even if it's $5, $10, $25, whatever that is. That continual support goes a long way to giving us to helping us map out where we're going to send support. And for all those guys that we're partnering with, it gives them that confidence to know that they've got a long-term, you know, support. So go to onekingdom.org. You can also buy, I'm wearing some gear today. I brought you guys some gear later.
Oh, yeah.
You can rep us wherever you're going, but it also that goes to support our ministry as well.
Yeah, I saw one of your right-hand man yesterday in the grocery store. I turned around and I saw a shirt, and I thought, well, I need one of those shirts. And I read it. It said, "Rub some dirt on it." And I looked up, and it was Robert.
It's Robert, yeah.
One kid. I said, "Where did you get that shirt?" And he said, "Ryan Lee made it for me."
Yeah.
I was like, "He's going to be on our show tomorrow." He was like,
"You don't know Robert, he just turned 70.
So
he
what
bench
is it?
Presses 250.
I'm ignorant of what you're talking about. What does it mean?
Rub some dirt on it. I didn't know, but I loved it. I think it meant like if you're griping or complaining. Exactly. Or
here's the author of the shirt.
What? Well, Robert, he just turned 7 years old. He still bench presses 250. You know, he's just a man's man. And, you know, if anybody's griping or complaining or, you know, I'm not feeling well, his phrase, he always says, "Hey, just rub some dirt on it." You know,
in other words, get over it.
Get over it. Yeah. You know, there's work to be done. Yeah. You know, and I love that about him.
Because I was telling him about our ailments. I said, "Me and Phil," and he's like, "Rub some dirt on it."
Yeah, I'll remember that one. Rub a little dirt on it, man. You'll be all right.
Yeah,
it's good to have you, Ryan. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate
it.
Absolutely. We'll do it again.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.